Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. There's one topic you can discuss anytime, anywhere, and draw listeners, and that is football. It's just the way the culture is today in America sports-wise. Yes, the NBA Finals start tonight. Yes, the Stanley Cup Final is moving to the coast with the Pens up 2-0. We'll talk about those in a few moments. But you could talk about football anytime. And we shall today. Neil Coulong is going to join us in the next half hour. And in the final, in the second hour, at 4:06, Kimberly Jones from NFL Network is going to join us. So we're going to have a lot of football talk on the show today. And it is a topic, Sean, as you all know, we can hit anytime, anywhere.
Not a problem. We're just under 100 days till the start of the National Football League season, but who's counting? A lot of teams are dealing with OTAs, and mini camps are in a couple of weeks, and then, of course, you got that long 4 or 5 week break to the start of training camp and next month.
And meanwhile, Penn State's 93 days. That's where we are.
We are. So, but yeah, Kim's been on the beat with the Giants and the Jets. So it'll be great to hear her take on how Christian Hackenberg is settling in next level. And of course, since we last spoke last night, breaking news with Ryan Fitzpatrick possibly getting back to Jets camp.
Well, they have to. In my opinion, the best thing for Christian Hackenberg is if Ryan Fitzpatrick signs with the Jets, which he will. But he needs that buffer where he's not thrown in right away. Open the door. Play preseason. Be in practice. Work on the scout team. Pick up the knowledge from a veteran as to how you handle things and the speed of the game. And then when time is ready, time is ready. And you're all set. And that's why I think Ryan Fitzpatrick, it's interesting. There's been so much talk and drama out of the Jets camp, which we'll get into with Kim here when she's on. Meanwhile, the Giants continue to be the boring winner in town. Even though the Jets did win more games last year. Our guy Jim Harbaugh, Nick Saban's comments about satellite camps are hypocritical. I did not realize that not only is Harbaugh doing a satellite camp in Australia, but he's also doing one in American Samoa. So here's Derek Tyson's story with Jim Harbaugh. Today did not back down from a tweet directed toward Nick Saban regarding the Alabama coach's comments on satellite camps. When asked about the tweet, Harbaugh, who took part in the Next Level Elite Football Camp in Atlanta, reiterated his sentiments from Twitter. The issue was what I said it was. Somebody had just recently broken rules and has that history, is lecturing us other coaches about potentially violating rules. I thought it was hypocritical. I thought it was a hypocritical act. And as you know, Nick Saban took the job after Alabama had come off probation. Alabama was on probation in 2005-6. Penn State was scheduled to play them in 5 and 6. And at Alabama's request, Penn State moved the series back to 10 and 11. Because Alabama was shorthanded at the time. And Penn State has had a great rapport with Alabama over the years. And so Penn State moved the series back to 10 and 11. So Harbaugh is not incorrect in the history of Alabama. Now, as for Saban, Saban says he's not going to apologize for speaking his mind and what he thinks is for the betterment of the college game. He said, this is business. I really don't care what he thinks or tweets. I say what I think is best for college football and say what I think is best for the players and the kids. As I said, it's not about him or anybody else. And as I've talked about satellite camps, look, I don't mind the idea that it makes it easier. You have a satellite camp, it makes it easier for you to get to the camp because it's within a driving distance for you. It also puts the brand of the school into your neighborhood to take a long, hard look at them. And that part, to me, is a big plus. Now, the other part. Now, there's another side to it. The other side to it is, you know, I'd rather get them on the campus here. See Penn State. See the facilities. Be around the players. Be around the program. Be around. And really get a feel for what it's actually like here. I'll take that any day over a satellite camp. Now, if I'm coaching and there's satellite camps and it's part of the rules, you're darn right I'm going to be at as many satellite camps as possible because I can't lose players because I need to keep my program moving forward. But if they told me tomorrow, as they did about 6 weeks ago, no satellite camps this time. I'd be like, okay, great. We get these guys to campus. We'll talk to them here. Our coaches can be around more. They can be around their families more. You know, there's a lot of pluses to not having them either. So each side has a plus to it. The big plus is location of satellite camps. It does get your brand down into the area. And more importantly for the student-athletes, it gives them more access and drivability to be a part of them. I am not big, as you know, in the AAU system in basketball. But it is what it is. If I'm coaching, I'm going to as many AAU as possible because that's where I've got to go out and look for my future players. So I have to go. I mean, I'd do it. And I'd throw my heart and soul into it because that's the lifeblood of my program. Doesn't mean I have to like the system. And I'm worried that college football is warping toward the AAU type of system that just substitute satellite camp for AAU. That's the part that makes me a bit uncomfortable in seeing that. But right now it's the rule, and it plays out, and it exists. And I think if anybody wants to I think, you know, one of the more important things that you can do with Jim Harbaugh is this. Ignore him. If you want to contradict what he's saying, if you take the opposite side, you can do it without even ever mentioning This is tough. This is how I feel about it. I'm not crazy about it for this reason. Boom. There's no need to bring his name into it. He wants to tweet and counter what you said or say something snarky or whatever. Ignore him. Because every time you respond, you help him. Ignoring him, acting as if, you know, like, I don't care what his opinion is, what he wants to do. So, I'm just saying that, I mean, that's how I'd handle it. I'd be like, he said this. Oh, okay, that's fine. It's his opinion. And leave it at that. But he's taking shots at everybody. Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State. Well, actually, it's in the DNA. You're supposed to take shots at Ohio State if you're at Michigan. So, that's just in the blood. All right. We will come back with more in a moment. Neil Coulong next half hour. 406 Kimberly Jones from NFL Network. As we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.
Great to have you with us. Steph Curry, to his credit, was asked today about being the face of the game. And he said, I'm not interested in that at all. Good for him. Good for him. Individuals that are great players are, without question, in this a very simplistic statement, absolutely essential to a team winning. Do the Pittsburgh Steelers win without Ben Roethlisberger? Awfully tough. Awfully tough. But you have LeBron James. You know, there are certain people you can say are the face of something. Tiger Woods, face of golf. But remember, golf is an individual sport. You may have been able to say that Roger Federer, face of tennis. Again, individual sport. You know, I know Roger Federer, Pete Sampras, John McEnroe, Arthur Ashe, Jimmy Connors. You know, Chris Everett, Martina Navratilova, you know, on and on, Steffi Graf. It's an individual sport, so claiming to be the face of that sport is very much so. The Olympic Games are coming up. Would you consider Michael Phelps to be the face of the Olympics? I mean, some might say Usain Bolt, but you know, Bolt doesn't resonate. Missy Franklin. You haven't heard her name mentioned in 4 years. At least Phelps, just by saying he's going to come back, I mean, you heard his name a lot. Gabby Douglas, maybe. Team sports are different. LeBron James is a perfect example. If you want to say face of the NBA, okay. LeBron James is the perfect example of what Steph Curry is talking about. Curry said, I'm not looking to be the face of anything. I just want to win titles. Steph Curry has a title under his belt and a couple of MVPs. But he's not in this position right now unless Klay Thompson has some great games. Draymond Green has some great games. Last year in the finals, Andre Iguodala was the finals MVP. Meanwhile, LeBron James is proof that a great, great player, a transcendent player, is not enough as an entity unto itself to win the title. It's a perfect example of it. 2007, really, he does everything in his power to get there. They do get there, and then they're taken out by San Antonio with ease. He finally moves to Miami and joins with two other great players, one a Hall of Famer and one that, unfortunately, now with blood clots, is going to be a, I think it's going to be a long shot he makes it, but Chris Bosh is who I'm referring to. And Dwayne Wade. Now he gets in combination with other great players. And they win 2 out of 4. Last year he gets in the finals. Irving gets hurt game 1. Love can't play at all after the Celtics series. He gives it everything he has. He gives it every. I mean, LeBron James leaves it all out there, gives it. And it's not enough. They don't win. Golden State wins in 6. So he is a perfect example of the transcendent player, face of the game player, the whole deal, blah, blah. But he needs other great players around him to win. And that's the way it is in every team sport. Sidney Crosby calls out last night the play off the faceoff. He wins the faceoff. He's done his part. Letang, another really good player, then comes in, makes it look like he's going to shoot, and then passes to Connor Sheary. Great patience. And Sheary, the kid out of UMass, scores. And by the way, if you don't think coaching is important, Mike Sullivan of the Penguins last night called a timeout after an icing with his team out of gas, got him rested. They got the puck out of the zone finally after the timeout. Haglund dunked it in. They were able to change up, and it changed the overtime because he didn't want to sit there and save his timeout for the end of the period. You want to save that to the end. No, you don't. You got to use it when you need it. Well, guess what? He knew he needed that timeout. A great, subtle coaching move that won, which was a reason behind his team winning last night. Coaching makes a difference. I'll tell you, give Steve Kerr a lot of credit. You win 73 games. What's your tendency? What is your tendency to make changes? Not much. Yet in game 5 after back-to-back losses, he gets Bogut deeply involved and starts him. And then for the first time all year, he starts Iguodala in game 7. Good coaching.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Kimberly Jones next half hour from NFL Network. Neil Coulong in a few moments. Time now for This Day in Sports History. In 1883, the first game under the lights took place in baseball in Fort Wayne, Indiana. 1935, Babe Ruth announced he was retiring from baseball. His goal was to become a suit. Well, stop laughing. 1941, Lou Gehrig passed away in New York of ALS. Ted Williams, 1959, got his 2,500th hit. Never got to 3,000. That's because he missed six seasons because of World War II and the Korean War. Randy Johnson, first no-hitter in Mariners history, 1990. And Fred McGriff, then with the Tampa Bay Rays, became the 31st player to hit 400 home runs in a career. That is this day in sports history. Wasn't it your goal to become a suit?
Still working on it. Minus the tie.
Stick with this. It's more fun.
How about it?
Oh, no. The last time I was around him, he was on the phone every 2 seconds. We're trying. You know, Dave Ritchie's out there calmly playing a really wonderful game of golf. Jennifer Wakeman and I are laughing our way through the round. Meanwhile, the suit's up there pacing back and forth. We finally had to tell him to get out of the sand trap. All right, so let's bring in Neil Kulong from NFLDraft.com. Neil, the Jets are always a lot of fun. Waiting on Fitzpatrick. It's like the big news right now. It's like you're just waiting for something to happen.
Jets really want to kind of make this interesting. We are our beat reporter for the Jets on JetsWire. Connor Hughes is out there for the open media sessions, and there seems to be some kind of tense moment in the locker room every time he goes there. It was Eric Decker the other day. It was Geno Smith last week. It's really just kind of you don't want to say a circus necessarily. It's not that big of a deal. But at the same time, it's like you guys have to walk in knowing the horde of reporters who are there are going to ask you about Ryan Fitzpatrick. It just answer the questions. You don't have to make it more than it is. But it just kind of seems like Decker was doing it, Brandon Marshall was doing it. I think Geno Smith took probably more exception to it than he should have, considering his history and what his role was on the team last year. I mean, of course the team's going to look to bring this guy back. You know that's going to happen. So all of that put together, I mean, it really just kind of seems to be an interesting scenario there. And my thought always was Fitzpatrick eventually is going to go back. They'll haggle over dollars at the point that, he doesn't have to do the off-season stuff, and he'll show up for at least a part of training camp, and he'll be their starter this year.
And let's face it, I mean, the guy that would benefit the most out of all this, if he does sign, is actually Christian Hackenberg. I mean, Hackenberg needs some time behind a veteran that's been around the block that, franchise-wise, this would help them and him down the road.
I agree 1,000%. And sandwiching all three of the quarterbacks together put Geno Smith right in the middle of that as an example of what can happen when you're put in too early. I don't think Hackenberg is ready to play right now, but clearly the team made an investment high enough to suggest that they are counting on him for the future. And I think there are plenty of negative things that can come to a quarterback if he gets out, he's on the field too early. And there are a lot of positives that can come from him not playing. And part of that is him being frustrated with the fact that he's not playing. That's good. I think it keeps a guy hungry. It makes him have to fight even harder the next year to beat out whoever it is that might be there. It's definitely an advantage for him in the situation that he's in. And I agree with you. It's exactly what he needs. And I think that's really what the Jets want. And it's what they'll eventually get. Part of Fitzpatrick's holdup, too, is probably the fact that he knows that Hackenberg is their guy in the future, and he doesn't want to sign somewhere on a three-year deal and end up possibly missing free agency next year or the year after when the team knows they're going to go with Hackenberg. He could miss out on a chance to start somewhere else. So it will be his team, and right now I think it's up to him to, kind of embrace the opportunity that he has, and everything that I've heard out of Jets camp is that he's doing exactly that.
What about the Steelers? What do you think of where they are right now? Is there a comfort level about where they are, that they've filled some spots, or there's some areas where they still have to be concerned?
Well, if you would have asked me 2 weeks ago, I'd say they should probably feel pretty comfortable with what they have. I mean, they have a deep team. It's taken them a couple years to build back some of that depth. They definitely showed some flashes last year that they can compete with the better teams in the NFL. I think that they, you know, going into the draft, I think they were a legitimate Super Bowl contender. I think that they still are. I don't think the draft is really going to help them out all that much in that regard, but that's not exactly, you know, atypical for a team that's had success the last 2 years the way Pittsburgh has. Now, with news coming out potentially about Senquez Golson, their second-year cornerback, who's yet to get on the field, possibly being injured again. He said it was a soft tissue injury, but really, if there's one thing that's really going to hurt the Steelers between now and January, it's going to be any kind of depletion of depth among their cornerbacks. And Golson, who's as NFL experience as Artie Burns is in many ways, kind of seemed to be the default winner of that nickelback position. Now, if you're not going to have that and you have to put Burns on the field that early, and I think Burns is right up there with Hackenberg as far as guys that shouldn't get on the field their rookie year, they're going to be in trouble. That's another big weakness. In fact, I'd even argue that they're in a worse cornerback position than they were last year if any one of them goes down. So that's something to monitor for sure. And you really don't have a deep veteran cornerback market out there right now. So that could be a problem.
I mean, idealistically, you'd like to keep Burns from being on that corner, but you may be playing him in a sub package on the slot that can really give him a little break in and get another athlete on the field. And if they don't have that luxury, that's a big problem for them.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's interesting with him. It's curious how they're going to develop him, because if he's more athlete than football player right now, which I think he is, I think he's better off on the outside because he can move Will Gay inside, which I think it is his ideal position. And the Steelers just haven't been able to find two consistent outside cornerbacks to get Gay to the inside in those sub packages. I think that's what they would ideally like to do. And if they have to have a situation like they've had in the past where their nickel ends up playing on the outside, I think that's what they would like Burns to do until you start playing some of the big receivers in the league, guys that are really going to pick on him and really beat him up right away. That'll be a problem. Even with an offense like the Steelers behind him, you have a guy that's that big of a liability and has that big of a target on his back for big plays, then, you know, that's going to be an issue. And it's definitely a concern, for them right now.
Obviously, you'd like to keep Burns out of there if you couldn't, and give him that, as we would say, what, a Hackenberg year. What about Alex Sean Davis, though? Is he probably ready to step in and make a contribution somewhere for them in the secondary?
Interestingly enough, I think Sean Davis is the guy who's standing in Burns' way more than anything else. I think he's I don't think his ceiling is as high as Burns' is, but I definitely think he's a better player today in the role that he is in. And the luxury the Steelers might have is they can play a bigger nickel package. They can put a third safety on the field if they can find, you know, some versatility at those safety positions. And right now you're looking at the starters of Mike Mitchell and Robert Golden. If you bring in a kid like Davis, and this is a package the Steelers have tried in the past, they tried to do it with Shamarco Thomas covering on the inside in nickel situations to stay big against the run. That obviously didn't work out very well. Ask Rob Gronkowski how much he likes Shamarco Thomas covering him up and down the field. That game, I think that was the most points the Steelers defense ever gave up. That type of situation obviously is going to be a concern of theirs, but I think Davis is probably a little bit more pro-ready. He certainly has a bit more height than Thomas does. So looking at it in the frame of today's defense versus what they were, the dumpster fire of 2013, I think he has a better chance, I think, to be a more involved sub-package player than Burns does. In doing that, I think they could have a little bit more flexibility. But in the end, I mean, he's not a cornerback. I think Maryland proved that, why they had him playing corner as much as they did. It was not an ideal situation for him, and the Steelers made clear right away they wanted him to be a safety. So I think he has enough coverage ability to kind of handle that inside stuff, and perhaps that's an option if they get into injury trouble, that Davis ends up, you know, making a push for that nickel spot.
Of course, what would really help the secondary would be a lot of pressure up front. That's always the secondary's best friend. In Bud Dupree's development, what do you see as an up for him where a year's going to make a difference? Where can he be a better player and a better difference maker than he was his rookie year?
From what I saw with him, he had a real tendency to play the read and react game a step behind everybody else. Right. What I mean by that is you could tell he would make a drop or he would make a move and he would kind of freeze and sort of go back to where he was going before, then that's an indication that the guy doesn't know what's going on, whether that's a schematic issue or whether he got fooled by whatever the offense was running. And in those situations, what's good about Dupree is he then just turns into an athlete, you know, almost like this screw it mentality. I'm just going to go find the guy with the ball. And certainly the athlete that he is, that's going to be an advantage. And he made plays like that a couple times last season. But I would say overall, it's a recognition thing, and it's kind of a leverage and power thing. Bud Dupree is one of the largest human beings you're ever going to see. He's a legitimate 6'5", 275 pounds, and he doesn't have an ounce of fat on him. The guy is a thoroughbred and just an incredible athlete. I saw him get blocked by way too many running backs for a guy that size who's coming off the edge with a 2 or 3 yard head start. I saw way too many of them, and the biggest one probably Thomas Walls of Seattle, who's a big guy, but Dupree is considerably larger than any running back in the NFL. There's no reason those guys should be standing him up the way that they did. That's a technique, and that's a leverage thing. He really should just be driving those guys through back into the quarterback. And I think you can tie that in with the recognition piece and that he doesn't know how to use his leverage on the field well enough. I mean, you watch a veteran like James Harrison, he's going to bowl a tackle into the quarterback because that's a play that he can make. Dupree, it seemed like he spent a little too much time trying to set his hands up and you know, avoid the guy who was coming at him. The pure football player is just going to go through him because he's considerably bigger and the ball is close. So, you know, fastest point between two lines, go through the guy that's in front of you, you know. And I think that will come with the more snaps he gets, the more, you know, he's able to play fast, he can play with confidence. He'll see more of that advantage and he'll really start to use that physical presence that he has.
It's a topic that nobody wants to bring up and talk about because you'd like to see Ben Roethlisberger complete the entire season and take every single snap. But what is the backup quarterback situation?
It's going to be the same as far as Jones goes. And you'll have Bruce Gradkowski, the veteran who really couldn't do anything without getting hurt last year, it seemed like. I mean, he missed half a camp with basically a sore shoulder is everything I ever heard about it. And he came back, he practiced for a couple games and got in against Green Bay in their second preseason game and ended up, I think he broke his hand or broke his wrist or something on a handoff. He played 7 snaps and that was it for him for the year. I think the Steelers had a decision to make of whether or not to place him on injured reserve, you know, knowing that he's missed that much camp. And instead of waiting for him to, you know, heal up and get ready, they decided just to put him on the shelf and sign Mike Vick. A decision that I don't think was necessarily a smart one in terms of how it ended, but I don't know how many other options they had.
Right.
You keep all of those guys healthy, I think it doesn't matter. I mean, really, the key is just keeping Ben healthy. Outside of that, as we saw with the Steelers last year, they're going to struggle with anybody who's available under center if Ben isn't playing. So in my mind, keep whoever you want back there. It doesn't really make a difference. You got to keep 7 healthy.
So in other words, the bottom line is you'd probably recommend people find religion. All right, let's see. That's the best solution. Big Dan McCullers. This is 6'7", 352 pounds of pure fun. Not a lot of production in that pure fun, but is he somebody that when you look at him, you know, because he had the shoulder surgery and they gave him contact lenses and, you know, they cleaned out his cartilage. Is he a potential contributor?
I think he's a contributor in the sense that if they start in their base defense, he's a starting player. I don't think they're going to ideally have him playing more than 14 snaps a game. But I in all honesty, McCullers is still around. They're putting the work that they are into him because he shows flashes of high-level play. His rookie year, I want to say this was against Tennessee, he got the drop on the center. I forget who the center was then. This is 2014. And I'm not even exaggerating. He threw the center 3 yards into the backfield. And from there, he cut after the running back. And it wasn't, you know, your quintessential Lendale White kind of running back. It was that Bishop Sankey kid. He almost ran him down to the corner.
Right.
Sankey had to get wide all the way to the sideline to avoid the 360-pound Dan McCullers. I mean, it was one of the most impressive plays I saw that season. And you know that he has that potential. but it flashes me to training camp last year. There was a series of plays, and this is toward the end of camp. McCullers wasn't really, you could tell he wasn't going as hard as perhaps he could have. And defensive line coach John Mitchell got all over him. I'm not going to repeat on the air some of the things that he was saying, but I was about 10 feet away, and he was just in his face. And that kind of fired McCullers up. And after that, McCullers took the poor undrafted free agent that's literally half his size that came after him, and he basically threw him through the goalposts. You can see, on a per-play basis, McCullers really making an impact. And I'm not saying at all he's an all-pro player. He's Casey Hampton. He's not. That's not how the position is going to be used anymore in that defense. But I definitely think McCullers has enough talent and enough, short-space athleticism that he can make an impact in that A-gap. And I think they're really going to want him to solidify that on early downs for the inevitability of a team, trotting out 3-4 wide receivers to challenge their nickel package like they have been for, the better part of a decade now. But if you own those early downs, if you take away a team's ability to run the ball, they're not going to be as good an offense, period. So really with McCullers, it is a per-play situation for him, and the work that he's putting in, the things they're having him do, kind of speaks to him being a starter. I think that's going to be his role in 2016.
Neil, always great stuff. Appreciate it very much. Have a good one.
Definitely. You too. Thanks for having me.
We'll transition from Neil Coulong to Kimberly Jones of the NFL Network in the next half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Subaru Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Welcome back, Kimberly Jones, next half hour, NFL Network. Great to have her on the show. And Special Olympics underway today here at Penn State. Coaches versus Cancer, the reception is tonight. The tournament is tomorrow. Sure, they'll get some idiot to MC it. Stop laughing.
Coach Chamber is already tweeting photos from the site a little while ago. Catching.
Probably.
Yep.
Probably just from the archives. No, I'm just kidding. No.
That's true. Change the hashtag. It looks good to me. Looks new to me.
it's all right. I mean, it's great. The NBA finals start tonight. The Stanley Cup final. Again, a coach made a big difference last night. When you ice the puck, the team that ices the puck cannot make a change. In other words, they're trying to prevent you from icing the puck just to get off the ice. Well, the Penguins iced the puck. So Mike Sullivan took a minute and talked to the officials about whether or not the puck was hit with a high stick. You can see on the replay, it misses the stick by about 2 to 3 feet. So he bought some time there, and then he has one timeout to use, and he used it there, right at the beginning of overtime, because he knew his guys needed a break. Eventually, the Penguins get the puck out of the zone. Carl Hagelin dumps it in to the right of Jones, which allows the Penguins to get the weary players off the ice, get fresh guys out there, and eventually off a set play, which Crosby called, not Mike Sullivan, but Crosby called, they win the game. Somebody said to Crosby afterward, you know, really, you know, ingenious stuff. And he said, yeah, I called 24 others that didn't work during the night. That was pretty good. Kimberly Jones next half hour in the NFL. A lot on the Jets and Giants. I'll say this about being in New York. The Jets make it just really easy, except in one regard. Which story do you choose to lead? We'll get into Ryan Fitzpatrick covering the NFL, her days at Yes Network, her days here at Penn State. Kimberly Jones, NFL Network, next half hour. Today's show brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury.